My name is Robert Schöne, and as you said before, I'm talking about memory performance at reduced CPU clock speeds for current x86 server processors. So most of them are server processors. Here's the outline. First, I'll present the motivation we had for this paper. Then I'll describe our test systems we examined and the benchmarks we used for that. And later, in the next step, I show you the results we obtained from these test systems and finish with the conclusion. So the motivation is that the energy consumption of data centers and HPC computers is increasing steadily over the last years. But the good news is that the power saving techniques from mobile devices are merging into the server market. And DVFS is one of the major techniques to save power. This is used actually in software to increase the energy efficiency of the system, and the general approach is to lower the core frequency during a memory phase and raise it during a computing phase. And we hope that we don't lose any performance by that because we think that we don't have an impact on the DRAM frequency, and therefore everything should be fine. So here are the test systems. We have four Intel processors and three AMD processors. For Intel, we have four generations, Nihon MEP, Westmere, single socket, and dual socket Sandy Bridge processors. The single socket Sandy Bridge processor is the only non-server processor we use because our single socket server Sandy Bridge had some had some stability issues. And then we have three generations of AMD with Istanbul, Magnicore, and Interlagos. The one in Italic we'll look into more detailed. And most of them are multi-socket systems. And for all the numbers I'll be presenting, we only looked at one NUMA domain. So we only looked at the bandwidth from one die. In the following, I'll only show you bandwidths, not power consumption or energy or something like that. It's only bandwidth because the power consumption also depends on what additional components do you have in your system and so on. And that's why I won't present it here. And before we come to the results, I'll show you what is between the core axis in the memory and the memory itself. For Nihalem and Westmere, this is a crossbar design. So we have the global queue, and all the cores are attached to the global queue and access the level 3 cache or the QPI or the memory controller. For the Westmere EP system, we have a 2.66 gigahertz uncore clock frequency, and there are two frequencies domains for these chips, one frequency for all the cores and one frequency for the uncore. And the Sandy Bridge design is much more different. So we have a ring setup, and every core has its own slice of the level 3 cache, and a 32-byte wide ring connects the three cache slices and the graphics and the system agent holding the memory controller, and there's one frequency domain for the uncore and the cores. The same is true for the dual socket Sandy Bridge AP. Only that the ring is now only that there are now two rings with which are 32 bytes wide, and of course also connect to the QPI and the system config. It's now not anymore the system agent; it's the home agent because it also provides the coherency with the other modules which are attached with the QPI there. But still has one frequency domain for cores and uncore. And this is the AMD design for Interlagos. That's really fairly complex. So we have multiple crossbar. One is called crossbar. The other is a service request interface. And the modules sit on top of the service request interface and connect to the L3 via the SRI and to the memory via the SRI, the XBAR, the MCT, and the DCT. So that's a really long way for that. And this Northbridge design from AMD didn't change over the last year, so it's merely the same for Interlagos and Istanbul and Magnicore. The only difference is that for Interlagos is there are modules accessing this service request interface and not cores. We have multiple frequency domains, so every module in previous generation, every core has its own frequency, and the Northbridge has an own frequency. We used microbenchmarks to determine the bandwidths to the different memory levels. And these benchmarks were written by Daniel Morker, and they allowed to measure memory latency and bandwidth. You can place your data in any cache or memory location you want, and you have direct coherency control, so you can not only measure the latency to a foreign level one cache, but also to data in a modified state or exclusive state in a foreign cache. It's implemented parallelized using pthreads with affinity control. It's written in assembler, at least the measurement routines, and used the timestamp counter for time measurements. There's NUMA aware location, and it's open source, and you can download it here. In the following, we are not measuring bandwidths to other cores, but only to the main memory and later to the level three cache. And it's just pure reading with multiple threads from the memory location below. So the assumption was that we can lower the processor core's frequency without hurting our DRAM performance, and that's just not true. I mean, it's true for the Intel processors, at least for the Nehalem EP and for Westmere and for the Sandy Bridge single socket system, but it's not true for the AMD processor, and it's not true for the Sandy Bridge dual socket system. These are highly effective, and they lose about 40 to 60% performance when we go to the lowest frequency of the processor cores. And in the following, we'll go into more detail. This is just running with full concurrency, so every core in the system is active and every core is reading the memory from the DRAM. So let's have a closer look. Here's Westmere EP, that's comparable with Nehalem EP, and we see that as long as we use enough cores, this is a little sophisticated, so I'll give you some time to read it. We have here one core active in these columns. So this is one core active, and this is one core active and hyperthreading activated. This is two core actives and two core hyperthreadings and also hyperthreading activated. This is always without, and this is with hyperthreading. Three core actives, four core actives, and so on and so on. And we see that if we use enough threads, then it doesn't. Then the DRAM performance isn't affected too much by using DVFS. So we can lower the frequency, and which is on the y-axis, without hurting our DRAM performance. And if we want to save even more energy, then we can also reduce the number of tasks which are accessing the main memory. So we could allow the core 4, 5, and 6. So we could allow the last three cores to go to idle states and saving even more energy, additionally to lowering the core frequency. Let's have a look at the single socket Sandy Bridge. The result isn't that much different. The hyperthreading doesn't worsen the performance anymore, but we can say again that we can lower the frequency without hurting the main memory performance, and this is still what we would expect, and we also can reduce the concurrency. But for Sandy Bridge EP, this is really, really different. What we see here is a decrease of 40% performance when lowering the core frequency. We think that this is due to our coherency checks, which should scale with the frequency of the of the processor, because QPI is much faster. And we've seen that the other encore awakes if we're accessing the memory. So we think that this is due to the coherency checks from the multi-socket system, and this should get better, I think, with four socket processors, because they have some filter, like AMD has some probe filter. So this will get better, we think, and but what the message here is despite it's more or less the same architecture like the single socket at Sandy Bridge, it's the behavior is totally different. And if you're just assuming that you can lower the frequency if you're in a memory bound phase, then you're really shooting yourself in your knee. Let's go to some AMD results. These are the Interlagos results, and these are not so bad compared to the other AMD results we've seen before. We see that we have only moderate performance losses if we use frequency, if we lower frequency and use enough modules. And this is due to the fact that we only have one North Bridge frequency for the systems. In previous, on the other AMD system we examined for that, we have multiple North Bridge frequencies, and if we lower the cross frequency, then we inherently also lower the North Bridge frequency, which limits our DRAM performance. So for the current AMD processor, if you can live with these 20% performance losses, then it's okay for you to lower your frequency. So what have we seen about the DRAM bandwidth? We've seen that you can lower your frequency on Intel processors, and it's no problem, at least not for fully occupied Intel processors. You have to see that if you have only one active thread, which most models don't take into account, the number of threads accessing the main memory, then you shouldn't lower your frequency at all. But if you have enough threads reading from main memory or accessing main memory, then on Intel processors at least, you can lower your core frequencies, except for the Sandy Bridge GP. We have seen that the previous AMD processors suffered really from lowering core frequencies in terms of main memory performance. But we have seen that we can reduce the number of tasks which are accessing the memory without hurting the performance, and that's true for all these systems. So we can always say that some cores or modules should go into idle states, so C states, and save energy with that, without hurting performance at all. And with OpenMP, this is really easy. That you just say that, in this case, just use less threads. Now we have seen the DRAM performance, and if we have an encore, respectively, an North Bridge frequency, which is independent of the core frequency, then we could think of the L3 cache as another memory level, which could be a source of energy efficiency improvements via DVFS. So we could lower the core frequency whenever we are L3 cache bound. And so let's have a look at this, and we still see there are some cases where we are not affected by lowering the core frequencies for the L3 cache bandwidth. We see that for these processors which don't have a dedicated encore frequency, but use one frequency domain for the whole processors, and we are linearly dependent. So the L3 bandwidth depends linearly on the clock frequency. And we see that other processors, so Neelam and AMD, are somewhere in between. So this is Sandy Bridge, and we see that I'm really too fast, am I? And we see that this scales. So if we double the frequency, then we double our L3 bandwidth. If we double the number of cores accessing the L3, then we double the bandwidth as well. So this is the boring chart. Here we see Westmere. And we see that we really need all cores active using the L3 cache to be able to benefit from frequency scaling. So whenever we are using less cores than these 6 here, then we are losing performance when we lower the cores frequency and access the last level cache. And we see also the NEALM here. If you remember the chart here with the full concurrency and the NEALM, which has basically the same architecture as the Westmere, it's not on the same level as Westmere. And that's just due to that the NEALM only has 4 cores. And we see that it would need 2 more cores, and then the performance wouldn't be affected. So this here is NEALM. And we see not only that AMD's L3 bandwidth is really low, but it's also highly dependent on the cores frequency. Even to the level 3 cache has its own frequency domain. So again, this is not an option to save power using DVFS. So what have we seen? The conclusion is within the picture on the bottom of the slide. If you are having a new system, then don't rely on it to be anything like the last system you bought. So this is the Westmere. And L3 bandwidth, as well as the main memory bandwidth, is, at least for a fully occupied system, not affected by the frequency. And this changes with the single socket Sandy Bridge, and this changes again with the dual socket Sandy Bridge. So before you're thinking about using DVFS to improve your energy efficiency, you should check your performance at different frequency levels. There's no common explanation for the reasons why they're scaling with the frequency or not, because it's highly hardware dependent. We've seen it in the block diagrams that there are always some things that should be taken into account. But the good news is that we can reduce the number of tasks that access the memories as an alternative to DVFS, and this can be used on almost all systems. So if you're on your way and checking the bandwidths for several frequencies, then you can also check this concurrency levels, and maybe then you will find a point where you can be more energy efficient with your application. So I think I was too fast, but that's it. And I wait for questions.
So we again have a bunch of time for questions and discussion. And again, I thought I'd lead off with a question. So it's really interesting and surprising that bandwidth scales so much. I'm curious at all whether with this data collection infrastructure, do you see these kinds of trends on latency as well? I mean, is the latency of the memory accesses in absolute nanoseconds? Now, obviously, in clock ticks, it's going to change. But are those also bending down in these bizarre ways, or?
We haven't measured the latency for different frequencies.
Is that possible with this measure?
Yeah, it's possible, yeah. Sure, yeah. But you just said, done.
Yeah.
If you're interested, I'll write down your and I'll send you the results. If you want.
Other questions?
So, one thing
Okay, so you had problems with this.
Why? I just missed why those.
It's just that this is one core,
right.
And this is still one core, but with hyper-threading.
Okay. And but then when you go up to the next column, it's changed.
And this is two cores without hyper-threading, and this is two cores with hyper-threading.
Okay. And is this on a single socket system or a dual
socket system? This is Westmere P is a dual socket system.
Dual
socket system, okay. but we only measure on one socket.
Because
the number of socket scales, we could measure one thread on every socket, but it would just be the double performance.
Right. Okay.
So it's saying one core can't push the memory controller harder.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is also bizarre why they designed it that way. Other questions?
I'm interested in how the memory frequency is related to the frequency you're saying. Have you measured the frequency of the different?
The frequency of the DRAM is. Oh, Westmere, it's this one. It's all we have. Such as. Yeah.
That's the maximum frequency, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the actual operating frequency in each of the CPU operating
points. But I haven't read any processor manual that says that we can lower the DRAM frequency at runtime, except for the newest AMD processor that has a DRAM P state, yes.
I'm not suggesting you can control it necessarily, but the past that I've run into is that I'm sort of off from machines that the memory bus frequency is controlled.
Yeah, on Opteron machines, that's the Northbridge P state, I think. So you're talking about the memory frequency, but I'd say it's the Northbridge frequency, which is inherently set. So every processor frequency has an accompanying Northbridge frequency, and the Northbridge frequency is based on the highest processor frequency. And the memory performance depends on that. And that's why the older AMD processors are down there, because the Northbridge P state just increases, so the frequency drops.
I guess the point is that it would be interesting to see what the actual memory frequencies are.
Yeah,
you're measuring it, so just
but we didn't have the privilege rights on these systems to read the Northbridge. It was a foreign computer system, so yeah, weren't good on this. We still have time, I think.
Yeah, maybe there's a question.